This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Thank you. And as I mentioned, I'm very much pinch hitting here for Katsuro Shinohara, who started this program many years ago and who has been helping lead it, both of whom are out of country. One thing I mentioned putting the slides this morning, that QR code in the corner there goes to our website, which we've written over many years in very close conjunction with the patient advocates, and we try to keep this quite updated. So a lot of the stuff we're hearing today, we do try to keep on the urology.ucsf.edu website. So bookmark that. So focal therapy has really been in fairly rapid evolution in recent years. And I mentioned earlier this morning that focal therapy really has a role in patients who are a little bit too high risk for active surveillance but don't necessarily need whole gland therapy with surgery and radiation. And this is sort of where it slots in. But how exactly we do this and for which patients is really an area of active research and evolution. First of all, the terms focal therapy and ablation get used equivalently, and they're not exactly the same. Focal means treating less than the whole prostate. Ablation means destroying part of the prostate or all the prostate with energy rather than with surgery or with radiation therapy. And energy can be a lot of things. It can be heat, it can be cold, it can be electricity. The idea is to destroy the tissue, accomplish something kind of akin to a lumpectomy for breast cancer without having to treat the whole prostate. And there are many, many ways to do this. There is an unbelievable amount of marketing behind these technologies and an unbelievably small amount of data comparing these modalities, okay? And this is a problem with the way things are regulated. To get a device approved by the FDA, it has to be shown to destroy prostate tissue and to not be dangerous. It does not have to show any data about its effectiveness in curing the cancer. So getting one of these technologies into the world is really not that hard. And once they're out there, of course, they get used for everything. So when I was a resident, HIFU was a four-letter word at UCSF because we saw horrible things being done in the community, patients with low-risk disease getting overtreated, patients with really bad tumors who were getting treatment in Mexico and Canada and all kinds of things happening. Today, the imaging is much better because focal therapy is all about imaging. Can we see the tumor? And the data are gradually getting a little bit better. So some of the major ones, HIFU is high-intensity focused ultrasound. This is a heat-based modality. The third generation system that we're using now is based on real-time ultrasound guidance. We typically have MRI fusion to help guide delivery of the energy from the rectum into the prostate. It's just like how we do imaging during a transrectal ultrasound in clinic, but it's much higher intensity ultrasound waves that actually heats the tissue to the point where we denature the proteins and hopefully kill the cancer. Cryotherapy has been around for decades. This is literally creating ice to create frostbite to destroy the tumor that way. IRE is a slightly newer one. This is also called NanoKnife. It's irreversible electroporation, basically using electrical current to punch holes in the cell membranes to the point where the cells can't survive. There's focal laser ablation, which is given transperineally, so laser catheters placed directly into the prostate and laser energy inside out. There's a ton of others. There's TULSA, which is transurethral ultrasound. There's radio frequency, kind of like the Bovie electrocautery we use during surgery. There's photodynamic therapy, there's water vapor, there's aquablation, there's eye of newt, there's like a million things you can do to destroy a piece of the prostate. And there are basically zero studies comparing these things head to head. So we have reasons that we think some modalities may be better than others for specific anatomy and specific situations, but again, the marketing here is way, way ahead of the data. So the idea of focal therapy is to treat part of the prostate, leave the rest of it alone. It's usually done by energy-based ablation. There are protocols out there for focal radiation therapy, for partial prostatectomy. I don't think either one of those things makes a whole lot of sense to me, to be honest, because these energy-based therapies are a little bit less invasive and probably a little safer. And the modality here, how we're getting the energy in matters a lot less than do we know what we're treating. Okay, so it really comes down to how good is the imaging. And the imaging, as we commented this morning, is getting better all the time, but it's still not 100% there. MRI does not show us every cancer. It certainly does not show us the extent of the cancer. We will often see a spot on MRI, but there can be more cancer surrounding that spot than we appreciate by imaging. So this is not really a replacement for surgery or radiation therapy. I think as we're understanding it a little bit better, it's best to think about this as an adjunct to active surveillance. When we ablate part of the prostate, the rest of the prostate is still there. We got to follow it. It can grow a brand new cancer. We can see a recurrence within the lesion. This is sometimes kicking the can down the road, and that's okay as long as we're kicking it far enough down the road and we're not compromising our ability to later do radiation or surgery or other treatments, which we think we are largely not. Now, another problem in this field is that the term focal therapy can mean anything from just treating the tumor with a little bit of a halo around it to taking out half the prostate to treating half the prostate plus part of the other side and really just leaving a little bit of the other side, contralateral nerve bundle behind, and all of these things get lumped into the same category of focal therapy. We've been working, Mark Delera at UC Davis and I have been working together, consortium together across all five UC, University of California campuses, and one of our first kind of areas of collaboration here is exactly around questions on focal therapy. And we put a consensus statement out a year and a half ago now with a couple general statements. First of all, we do need to acknowledge that we do not know exactly the right way to do this yet. And that is true of many things in surgery and radiation as well, to be clear. But we really should be doing this under clinical trial or at least cohort and registry development as much as possible. Who is a good candidate for focal therapy? Patients need to have a good life expectancy. If you don't have a 10 or better, 15-year life expectancy, we don't even really talk about prostate cancer for the most part. We should not be treating grade group 1. Focal for grade group 1 is no less over-treatment than surgery or radiation therapy. Conversely, this is not the right move for grade group 4 and 5 tumors. Those need whole gland therapy. They often need management of the lymph nodes. We do no dissection if we're doing surgery. You get pelvic radiation if you're doing the radiation, going down the radiation path. So grade group 2, visible on MRI or ultrasound, low volume grade group 3s, this is sort of the sweet spot. PSA should be reasonably low, density should be reasonably low. And it is essential that we have a confirmatory biopsy done here at UCSF before committing to focal therapy for the same reason that we do this after active surveillance, because the diagnostic biopsy will often substantially underestimate the extent of the cancer. And before we go down a focal therapy pathway, we need to know that we know what we're dealing with. We will allow some contralateral Gleason 3-3, meaning we see a visible tumor on one side of the prostate, you have a little bit of 3-3 on the other side, we're fine not treating that, but you don't really want to see higher grade cancer on both sides of the prostate. And the last point, it is essential that we do a biopsy at 12 months. We do not yet have any imaging tests that can effectively rule out a recurrent cancer, and certainly PSA trends alone are not good enough. So with all those caveats, we have been doing more and more of this. Another paper by Kevin Shi, our Rockstar resident, who recently reported our first 135 HIFU cases. About three quarters of them were grade group 2, one quarter grade group 3. The risk distribution you can see here by CAPRA, so mostly lower and intermediate risk, very few who are in the higher end of the risk category. And most of them had a significant visible lesion on MRI. We had Decipher scores on about two-thirds of these folks, half had low-risk disease and about a quarter higher-risk disease by Decipher. Now, in terms of how the energy was delivered, this is really an area of active conversation. You know, so about half of them were focal, so tumor plus a halo around it, 46% hemi-ablation, and then 13% had a double pass, meaning treat half the prostate or treat the tumor, and then come in with a second round of ablation energy to the lesion itself. And it's still pretty controversial whether this is the right thing to do, whether it increases the risks, whether it improves the success of the therapy in destroying the cancer, but it's, at least there was a phase when we were doing this for just about everybody. So here's the outcomes. About half the patients recurred, okay? And this is typical for every center that is doing a lot of ablation and honestly tracking their data, okay? 41% were in field, meaning right in the area or right next to the area where the ablation was delivered. Now, we don't necessarily know why this is, and it's an active area of research. This could be because we're not getting enough energy into that part of the prostate. It could be because we have underappreciated the extent of the cancer on imaging. It could be because the prostate grew a brand new tumor. These are all possibilities. There's a very small number of patients where it does seem like the ablation is actually making things worse. And just like we will sometimes see a higher grade recurrence after radiation than we see, after radiation than before, we will sometimes see a few cancers which really appear to be accelerating after ablation. And we don't know if we just happened to catch it when the genetics were getting worse, or if the ablation somehow triggered heat shock protein pathways or triggered some metabolism that accelerated the cancer. So the progression rate to needing whole gland therapy or to metastasis was quite low, 4% in the first year, 16% overall. In terms of causing urinary obstruction, the average IPSS, which is how we measure obstructive symptoms, was basically unchanged before and after ablation. But I'll tell you from my own experience, folks that have a lot of obstructive symptoms and are a little bit tenuous in their urinary function, we can kick you into retention by doing this because there is a fair amount of swelling that happens in the prostate. In terms of erection function, there was a subtle drop in erection function before and after focal therapy, not statistically significant. That P number here, we want to see under 0.05 to call it statistically meaningful. I think it's a fair statement, though, and there's evidence for this in the literature, too, that we're going to cause much less of an impact on sexual function than either surgery or radiation therapy will do. And the major drivers of recurrence in this study were having grade group 3 rather than grade group 2 and having a high Decipher, not surprisingly. So if we think about what the trade-offs here for focal versus other treatments, focal therapy clearly is associated with fewer side effects than surgery or radiation therapy. That's not really a controversial statement. It's also not a controversial statement that the recurrence rates are much higher than with either surgery or radiation. We think this is okay because we are not burning any bridges. We can still do surgery. We can still do radiation therapy. We can even do a second round of ablation in some cases. So it is kicking the can down the road. As long as we're not tripping over the can and causing actual problems, this seems to be okay. But again, how exactly we use it, in which patients, this is an area of really intense investigation for us here across the UC system and in a lot of other places around the country. And again, there is a lot of marketing out there, so I really urge caution in going down this path because there's a lot of folks in community practice that are using focal therapy in many, many situations in which it really has no place. I don't want to get too far into the questions of which modality is right. Again, this is more marketing than data-driven. But generally speaking, there are some that are probably better than others. So most prostate cancers happen in the peripheral part of the prostate. This is this crescent moon-shaped part of the prostate here. And most of the tumors happen in the peripheral zone next to the rectum. Tumors here are very good candidates for HIFU because the energy is delivered directly from the rectum into the tumor here. The caveat is that the nerve bundle, in outlined in blue here, in this case is right next to the tumor, and there will be some heat delivered to the nerve. If it's a really large tumor, we do worry about the cumulative dose of heat to the rectum. For anterior tumors up here, these are less common. They're more commonly missed or undersampled on biopsy. In this case, it's actually a little harder to get enough energy all the way from the rectum to the anterior tumor. So this is one where cryotherapy, that's using ice, can be a little bit better. Cryo is not as good for the posterior ones because the ice ball itself creates a shadow as the ice forms. So it's harder to see what's going on at the top of the prostate as the cryotherapy is progressing. So cryo can be a little bit of a better option for the anterior ones here. These are a big challenge, and they're not that common, but sometimes the tumors grow right next to the urethra. And in this case, honestly, there's no easy answer because anything we do to this part of the prostate, whether it's radiation, whether it's any type of focal therapy, will impact the urethra sometimes short-term, sometimes long-term. There is some reason to think that IRE might be a little bit safer here, but again, there are very few data to say it is actually better in terms of outcomes than HIFU. So to sum up here, you know, focal therapy clearly has a growing role for very carefully selected cases. The side effects are lower, but the recurrence rates are a lot higher. This is an adjunct to active surveillance, not a long-term cure in most cases. And again, that is okay as long as we all understand what exactly it is that we're doing and not doing when we do focal therapy. Lots of active research going on here and elsewhere, and this is definitely a space to watch very carefully. So thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.